All right, it's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and on the Stargate, eSETI Stargate in the YouTube channel. If you want to check that out, you can come in at 8 o'clock when this airs and go live with usually the people here on the show. So don't forget about that. A lot of shifts going on, a lot of changes. It's getting a little crazy out there. Just hang on, you're not alone. We've got a great show. We've got John Lord on. And I wanted to cover this for some time because we just came back from Australia and we're right in the middle of those fires in Australia. And down in, I used to live down in California for a while, and I know those areas that burned out in California, and things just weren't normal, you know, with those fires. So I couldn't think of a better person to talk about this other than John Lord. And he was enlisted in the U.S. Navy in November 1974 through 1978 as a Navy corpsman. And he served with the 1st Marine Division, looks like June 77 through 1178, where he received his training as a paramedic. After discharge, worked for a private ambulance company as a paramedic in Concord for 2.5 years. And then he got hired by the City of Petaluma Fire Department in September 1981, earned an AS degree in fire technology and a bachelor's degree in business management, fire officer certification, and other associated certifications and qualifications. Retired as a captain paramedic in December 2008. Has spent the past several years researching the truth about these fires. So without any further ado, let's bring John on the show. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Pleased to be here with you doing the show. I really am, James. I've been following you for years and your work. So
thanks. Yeah, these fires, God, I know you have so much to say. I want you to just consider this your show so you can get your story out, whatever you want to talk about this. But I mean, these fires were not normal fires. And I know the chemtrails are spraying accelerants on all the trees and everything else, with the aluminum and the metals. And then you've got, thermite being found also in the fire retard and all these, there's so many different things going on. I don't even know where to start. So I'll let you just take it from there and talk about these fires and what's really going on.
I'm not sure where to start either, James. So, but I think that it always bears fruit to talk about the setup on these. And one thing that I've been watching the skies for, probably 40 years because I'm a hang glider pilot. And the weather a couple of decades ago really started to deteriorate. So I learned about the chemtrails and geoengineering programs. And the significance of how they're playing into what's going on with these fires globally, we're talking globally.
Yeah.
It cannot be argued. And you can't get any of these people that are explaining these narratives to us about how these fires burn to actually even talk or admit to the geoengineering programs. So with the fires up here on the Tubbs fire, which was the one that burned into Santa Rosa, the Redding fire, which was the car fire, the two fires that we had that burned toward Lakeport, the river and the ranch fires, and also the Paradise fire. Heavy chemtrailing for 5 to 7 days before the fire started. So that's just a common feature. And what they basically do is they create a high pressure weather system, and they sprinkle the trees and the ground and everything else with these nanoparticulate combustible materials. And it creates a plasma type solution to the atmosphere, which allows them to be able to use the high technology to start and advance the fires. We had reports from people that were in the Paradise fire that, the fires were moving at a rate of about 3 football fields a minute.
Wow.
And that is extreme. So these same types of things were going on with Australia. heavy chemtrailing before the fires started. It desiccates the flora and the fauna in the forest. It sprinkles them down with highly combustible materials. It creates the weather and the drying out because it's a desiccant, and then the fires start. And all the firefighters that you see getting interviewed say, we've never seen anything like this. And yeah, we have never seen anything like this. It's not normal fire conditions. So that's the kind of the first thing to understand.
Yeah, they've said that here, the firefighters here, we had some fires up here. And what's really interesting is that we called it in. I called it in because we have night vision goggles. And I said, hey, there's a fire started. And we saw this helicopter fly over, drop a canister out, and it was smoking. And next thing you know, there's a fire. And it's up in the wilderness area, so they can't really go up there and do too much. But we called them up, and we said, hey, there's a fire. And we told them exactly where it was. And they go, yeah, okay. And didn't hear anything back. We called them next day, and hey, that fire's still going. It's small. It's really small. You could probably take a truck up there and a few shovels and a little bit of water and put it out, you know. Nothing, you know, like this. And call them up third day, you know. It took them 7 days to go up and even look at it. And I go, what are these guys doing? And then I find out that that's all beetle kill over there, and they just wanted it to burn anyway. But also, too, is that they wanted to get nice and big so they could cash in on it, you know. And you know, it ends up becoming a something million-dollar, $3-5 million fire. And, you know, and it burned a lot of reservation land, too, as well. But that's a little off subject. But I'm just going, what is going on here? It's almost like these things, they want them to happen. They want them to get bigger. And I know the chemtrails, the aluminum, I mean, they've been spraying it for a long time. It blocks the uptake of nutrients into the trees. And they die out, and then your whole forest is just ripe. And then you have the accelerants on top of that. Your whole forest is just ready. It's just a fire waiting to happen.
Well, one of the things that we've seen with the fires in California is that the trees burn from the base upward, from the inside out.
Yeah.
So we believe what's happening is the root structure goes out in the soil, and it's uptaking these nanoparticulates that are highly combustible. And then it's being fired off with some kind of microwave energy. And that was a consistent finding I have. Matt and I looked at hundreds of different trees that burned in Paradise and photographed quite a few of them. And they burned at the base from the inside out. In some cases, the trees did not even burn in the foliage up above, just down in the trunk area. And other extreme cases, James, this was wild. This was friggin' wild when I saw it. It completely burned the root system, leaving perfect tunnels that went down into the earth, and there was no debris that I could find in there. No organic debris. It was just all gone. And that was one of the most wild findings. And that was also a consistent finding with the trees.
Yeah, it is kind of consistent with these dew weapons, you know, the directed energy weapons, because, you know, you'll see a house and there's trees all around the house. The house is just totally destroyed. You know, the cars are melted, you know, the rims are melted. What's the temperature it takes to melt like aluminum rims or even steel rims that look like they got melted as well?
The aluminum has a pretty low melting point, but those are alloy rims, so it's slightly higher, but it's a range of, I believe, 12 to 1500 degrees for alloy rims.
Yeah, and fires don't really get
normal. Here's the deal with the rims. Here's the deal with the alloy rims. We've all seen the images where there's rivulets of where molten metal ran down the street. Okay. We've all seen those images. That there's not enough combustible materials around the wheel wells to cause total destruction of the tires and the rims. Mm-hmm. There's just not. I've been on hundreds of car fires And we'll pull up on a car fire and there'll be fire blown out from the engine compartment out through the wheel well.
Yeah.
But what we don't see typically is tire failure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is going to become a really important point because we'll just talk about the cars and the vehicles now. Consistently up there, what we saw in the cars and different vehicles is that they were completely destroyed. I mean, every combustible material was burned on them. Couldn't find any combustible materials on the interior, the exterior. The car handles were gone. The taillights, the bumpers, anything that was plastic was gone. And what you'd see if a car had tires on it, they would be completely gone too. And the steel belting from the radials were draped over the rim if the rim was left.
Mm-hmm.
In the cases where it was an alloy rim and burned up, it was off to the sides around the wheel well area. So what the conclusion that Matt and I came to is that the fire did not burn from the outside in and catch those cars on fire. It burned because the steel was being heated up by some sort of microwave energy. That's the conclusion that the evidence led us to.
Yeah, it's pretty undeniable when you see it. And I saw so many pictures of houses with green trees all around them. And the fire never burned the trees, but the house was just totally decimated. I mean, nothing left on the house. And I don't know how that happens. You know, it's like, how'd the fire get to the house in the first place? Yeah, I guess, you could say, well, there was a freak giant ember that came and lit the roof on fire or something. You could come up with something, but it just doesn't make any sense. Those trees not should be burned. Yeah.
We did not see the evidence up there to support that narrative. We did not.
Uh-huh.
We found vehicles that were completely incinerated on concrete driveways, compacted rock surfaces, paved. Yeah. Parking lots with no combustible material around them. Now, this is a finding, James, that you see all over the planet. If you look at some of the fires that they've had in Europe, I remember the one with the parking structure in Europe. I forget what country it was in, where all the cars were completely incinerated.
Yeah. And
it actually destroyed the concrete composite floor. And they tried to come back and say, that's because there was grease and oil and that had absorbed into the concrete and burned all that up. Yeah. So we really can see, after looking at the evidence, that there's a strong tie to the steel and heating up and causing the destruction. Now, it's true with the cars. It's also true with the structures. The structures that burn were, for the most part, completely gone. On the Tubbs fire, there was no remnants of appliances, toilets. A toilet melts at 3,500 degrees. It's impossible in a normal structure fire for it to get that hot, that low. It's usually around 300 degrees. So 10 times the temperature to melt a toilet. They were gone. Yeah. And all the steel shells from the washer, the dryer, the refrigerator, gone. So it's a little bit different on the Paradise fire because we could still see the shells from the appliances. But everything on all these fires collapses inward. So what Matt and I think is that the steel fasteners, and there's a gazillion steel fasteners, you would know because you build stuff, a gazillion steel fasteners in a structure. What we believe is that the metals were excited by some sort of microwave energy, heated up and caused all the combustible materials around them to catch on fire.
Hmm.
And that's where the evidence took us. So again, in Paradise, everything collapsed inward, just like the Tubbs fire is a small debris pile, but the shells of the appliances were present and that was a different finding. So what they may have done is fine-tune the frequency a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like PBS Radio, our main broadcaster was in Paradise at the time, and they lost everything. They lost their studio, the place they lived, everything, and they had to start over from scratch. And luckily, a lot of people, you know, we did a major GoFundMe thing to help them get started again and get up, and all these other people jumped in, and they did great. You know, they luckily there are so many people that wanted to keep, you know, BBS Radio going and things like that, that they got, you know, back up again. So, but it was, I thought it was odd that they, you know, they, I couldn't believe it. They go, yeah, we lost everything. And I said, how do you lose everything? You know, it's like, you know, it doesn't make any sense unless you're totally targeted, you know, but, you know, it's like toolboxes with tools in them were gone.
There was one guy we interviewed up there that was basically an arborist, you know, a forester.
And yeah.
He lost all of his climbing gear, his chainsaws and everything else gone. Uh-huh. So he didn't even have the ability to be able to work because he lost all his tools.
Yeah. And some of these are in metal sheds, you know, they were sitting in metal sheds and the sheds are gone. You know, it just doesn't, none of it makes sense other than some extreme technology being used on, you know, during these fires.
In normal fire conditions, you know, why the firefighters like crawl on their bellies.
Yeah. Okay.
In a well-involved structure fire, the temperature at the floor level is about 300 degrees. The mid-range temperatures, you know, up around 4 or 5 feet, usually 4 to 5 to 600 degrees.
Yeah. And
the temperature layer at the top, the highest point of the fire, is usually 1,000 degrees or more.
Uh-huh.
So with the stuff that's burning down low, you just cannot explain it because heat likes to go up.
Yeah.
So we started very early on when Matt and I were up there taking pictures and looking at it. Matt's another retired fire captain, and our combined experience is 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of experience there. And we couldn't explain the tire destruction on the tires because we'd never seen that before on car fires. And, you know, a lot of times we go on car fires, we put them out. But a lot of times we don't. We get there after the fact, after they're completely burned out. The fire's burned itself out because it happened during the middle of the night and no one called it in. So we've seen both scenarios. Mm-hmm. And to have the tires destroyed like that, we were having a hard time explaining it. And then we started noticing that the steel belt radials were draped around the rims. And so that further led to this conclusion that the steel and the different metals were highly involved in causing the heating of these different things that don't normally burn. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really fascinated. I saw some photographs of these trees and I saw the top of the tree looked fine. The whole inside was, and somebody got photographs of them while they're on fire. You could see the tree was burning from the inside out, and you know, holes were popping out of the sides of the trees, and I'm just going, this is not normal. You know, I've never seen that before. I've been in fires before, and you know, just like an hour ago, we created some big old huge brush piles, and it's a little damp still, and we couldn't even get them going. You know, we had to give it up. They're just not ready yet to burn. And yeah, you think about that. You know, I go, God, you know, we can't even get these fires going to burn these piles right now. We're going to have to wait till they dry out. But the other stuff going on, you know, that you're seeing is just pure insanity. And I know it does get hot and dry, and they are creating a lot of droughts with the chemtrails and things like that. But it still doesn't explain, you know, trees burning, like you're saying, from the roots up or from the inside out.
Yeah. And we were seeing it all over the place up there everywhere we looked. So the narrative with Paradise was that there was some sort of a problem with PG&E, with the power distribution lines, and that it caused the fire, and the fire roared up onto the bluff and consumed all these vehicles and all these structures.
Yeah.
And what Matt and I actually saw out there was exactly the opposite. We did not find the evidence to support that narrative. What we found was the trees burn from the inside out, the cars burn from the inside out, the structures burn from the inside out, and they were selective. You go down a cul-de-sac that has, you know, maybe 8 dwellings on it, and some of them burned and some of them didn't, and the trees around them were pretty much fine.
Yeah.
So that's what we're seeing.
Well, that brings another theory in, and I don't know. This is really a theory on the wild side, that there was a lot of people being targeted there. And there's even a wilder story that some of these people might have been off-world, you know. They're saying Paradise was a hot spot for a lot of off-world visitors that were
mingling. The Centurions that David Wilcock talked about?
Yeah, I've heard those theories too. And, you know, I said, well, it may be true. I don't know. But what you're saying, it does sound like they were being targeted. You know,
I believe that all the fires that we've seen in the last several years in California, not all of them, but most of them, majority of them, were intentional.
Yeah.
And that they're using high-tech directed energy weapons, and that those factors, the evidence factors, can be found in other countries where they're doing the same thing. Because yeah. I've seen it from different fires in Europe, a fire that happened in Mexico, same thing, great big open area where a bunch of brand new cars were out there that they had built, and something torched those. So, yeah. You know, so where's the fuel to catch those things on fire? It's not there.
Yeah. 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 It's getting a little crazy. I'm really wondering, you know, it's like you hear all these different theories, and one thing you can't discount them, you know, some of them you can try, but the bottom line, as we were saying, it was targeted. You know, people have been targeted, and certain individuals. And, you know, you really think about it, I know what kind of technology they have. Tesla had earthquake generators back, you know, when was he, in the 20s or something? I'm not sure when he was around.
Well, late 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, so he was building earthquake generators, and one got away from him. He had to break it up and take an axe to it or something, I guess, to shut it down. But, you know, so if he was doing that, and, you know, and he had death rays and all these other things that he developed back then, they took all of his technology and stole it, you know. And so, you know, you really think about it. If they had that technology back then, what do they have now? You know, where have they taken it, you know, since then? And I've seen, now this goes on another kind of a wild side. Here, we were sitting out in the front. There's quite a few of us. We had quite a few witnesses out there, and a very large ship started coming in. And the ship was, I got a bad feeling from it. I got a really bad feeling. I go, there you go.
I wore it just for you.
Oh, great. Yeah, I got a bad feeling about this ship. And I go, you know what, you guys, I go, don't shoot any lasers up or anything. Don't even let that. And they're all excited. Oh, look. I said, just ignore that ship. Don't. I said, I got a bad feeling from it. And all of a sudden we see this huge blue flash in the sky. And then it turns into powder. It just turns into like powder. There's nothing left.
The ship did?
Yeah. And so I asked the benevolent ones about it. And I said, what just happened there? And they said, well, they got met with the same intent they came in with. And I said, well, what'd you do? And they said, well, we have a beam weapon that just totally destructures everything. It breaks the atomic bond of everything, and it just turns into a gas or a powder. There's nothing left. You know, there's, I mean, the whole ship just is gone. And that's probably why you don't see a lot of debris, you know, with some of these right. battles. But, I said, oh, well, thanks for the heads up. You know, thanks for watching after us. But, you know, I know they have that weapon. I know we back engineer a lot of stuff like that. We have things of that nature.
We've got them mounted on everything. They mounted them on airplanes. They're probably mounted on drones. They're on ships or on all kinds of stuff. But they have really perfected some of the high-tech directed energy weapons. You can go to their channels and see their spiels on it.
Yeah.
They're proud of themselves, and they're pointing out their wares and what they're capable of, and then they always spin it toward it's going to be a positive thing until they hit us with it.
Yeah, exactly. So do you have any, now I saw a lot of video and things, and some people are saying, well, that's just a flash, like a sun flare or fire flare or things like that. And people took all these videos, but there's these beams coming down from the sky. And they look kind of greenish or blue. It depends on the camera, I guess. But did you get a lot of reports about that as well?
I got some. The most of the ones I saw were around the Tubbs fire, where people actually photographed those.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people who are saying, well, you know, laser beams are invisible. And, you know, I think that's may also depend on what's suspended in the atmosphere. And if you have these big fires going, they're going to put up a lot of smoke in the atmosphere.
Yeah, so that's true.
But, and then Jamie Lee had some still photographs that he got from somebody that lived up in Paradise that showed the trees from the top down, like this bright blue color.
Yeah.
So there was,
and we have those lasers here. We have those blue lasers here, and they will start a fire. And so, and they're that kind of purple blue, bluish color laser. And I show people, I go, watch this. And I put it on a, you know, on some grass. And I said, watch this. All of a sudden it's flames, you know, and you can start a fire with those, and you can buy those just online anywhere. I mean, they're available anywhere. So, you know, you can imagine if you can get a little handheld thing like that available to everybody, what do they have? You know, they,
let me talk about, we've covered kind of the basic groups of things I wanted to cover, but I want to cover one more. That's guardrails and culverts.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because this is another common thing that we're seeing. And with the car fire in Redding, I actually saw video footage where the posts were burning like Roman candles.
Wow.
Okay. And normally under the guardrails, and this was, you know, a dozen or more posts on this section of guardrail that were on fire like that. Normally speaking, with guardrails, you've got, you know, kind of the margin of the roadway on one side and very light fuels on the other. So I would not expect those to catch on fire like they did. You know, it can also be based on the terrain. So if they're protecting a car from leaving the roadway and going down an embankment, and that embankment has a bunch of fuels on it, things that grow, that could be a factor as well. But these were actually burning like candles in the middle. When we went up to Paradise, one of the first things I noticed is when we were on Skyway Boulevard, we were coming out of Chico and going up Skyway toward toward Paradise, is all those guardrails had been replaced.
Wow.
They were brand new. And so what they do, they replace those guardrails with a steel rail and steel posts. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that is a common feature on these fires. On the river, the river fire was burned over 175 Hopland Grade, and the ranch fire burned down Highway 20 from west to east. And one day I had to go into Ukiah, and I went in on Highway 20, went to Ukiah, did my thing there, and then came back, and I was looking at the guardrails, and they were sagging down to the ground. And the posts were all charred, and I'm looking at them, and I'm going, wow, that's weird. What would do that? And so a few days later, I went out the same way because I was carrying a toolbox for my son, went down to Petaluma, and when I came back, I came over 175. Same thing with the guardrails. Total destruction. So this is another consistent finding that we're seeing. And I actually found the evidence, which I'll get to Robert, that shows very clearly that the way the posts caught fire, they burned from the inside out, and where the greatest concentration of heat was is where the bolt goes through the block and the post.
Yeah.
I mean, physical evidence, it shows you the V patterns, the bottom of the V, the tip of the V always points down to where the greatest concentration of heat was. Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing I mentioned was the culverts. On 175, they replaced a dozen steel culverts that allow the water to flow under the roadway.
Yeah.
That one I could not figure out, right, until I put together the pieces that the steel is what's being attacked. It's being heated up. Mm-hmm. And so, and those culverts were destroyed. And in one case, when we were doing our investigation up around Paradise, they had just gotten done taking out a culvert and dropping in a new culvert up there. So it was going on up there too. So all the factors show me that that's what's going on, is the steel's being heated up, metals are being heated up, and they're actually causing the fires.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to disqualify any of that when you see it firsthand. It goes back, this is a whole nother subject, but it goes back to the World Trade Center. You know, what happened to that extreme steel grid, you know, that no plane could take out that building? It's impossible. But the whole grid, you know, the steel was gone. You know what, how did that happen? You know, that's only, it makes sense. It had to be some kind of a directed energy weapon or multiple things. I think multiple things happened there. I think they used a little mini nuke in the basement. They used thermite. They used charges to blow the main structure. I think it was all the above.
And it appears that they used some sort of technology from up above to kind of help everything to vaporize as it was
going. Yeah. Yeah, how do you turn a building that big into dust? I can't figure that one out. You know,
I'm in total agreement with you on the World Trade Center. I taught building construction for fire protection for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And when Greg and I started the course, we had to do all the footwork ourselves. There was only one textbook on it. And so we had to do a lot of the raw research ourselves. And there has never been a high rise in history that collapsed from a fire within. And the best one to look at is the Hotel Madrid in Spain, I believe in Spain.
Yeah.
That thing burned for like 20 hours or something like that, completely, fully involved in fire. And the steel was still standing afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to figure that one out. I mean, they've got some. I'm wondering how do you shield against something like this? To me, it's like dirt. You know, you'd have to have. But even if the culverts got taken out, even dirt wouldn't create a shield. You know, it's.
Well, in the root systems in the trees that we talked about.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe make an adobe house or something. I don't know. But the water in the adobe would probably crack all the
problem.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you would get away from.
Well, for me, what I do until this threat is neutralized and passes, what I do is I stay ready to go.
Yeah.
So I've got my car partially loaded with camping gear and other items like that, and then I had other things that I would take with me, kind of a grab and go situation where I could probably load my car in 5 minutes and be out of here.
Yeah, good idea.
The other thing to do is to keep your tank full of gas.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people died in Paradise because they ran out of fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. I think get all your really important papers in one box somehow. Just get everything in a box that you have to have, and whatever else you got, you know, whatever gold, cash, or whatever else you got. Have everything ready to go.
As the threat goes up, you want to increase that preparedness.
Yeah.
So, you know, the stage of stuff closer to where you'd be loading your car, you know, those types of things. And that's what we did up here. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to be digging around for stuff at the last minute. There was some people that perished because of that. And either that or they got stuck in traffic on the roadway and then perished.
Yeah, I saw some of the footage of people driving through the flames, and boy, it was like intense. And they're just praying all the way through, going, oh my God, oh my God.
I saw some of those as well.
Yeah, and luckily.
I think that, you know, those were the kind of put out there to support the narrative. And there was probably areas where those types of conditions were going on. But the one that I'm thinking of is one of the main streets in Skyway where all the cars were pushed off to the shoulder of the road, and the one with the bus. That's the one I'm thinking about. And I believe that those cars were occupied. They were in heavy traffic trying to escape, and their cars were fried with microwave energy and they burned alive in their cars. That's what I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad.
Very sad. Very, very sad.
You know, there's so many other elements to this where they were trying to, they already had that stuff, those areas rezoned for high density, you know, living and things like that. And they had, you know, there's a lot of other money coming in, you know, outside money, even other country money coming in to you know, they needed to clean these people out so they could do their program, their high density program. There's so many different stories about this. And, you know, even like a large parts of California and Hawaii were actually, you know, given as collateral to massive loans from China and other countries. And so they said, okay, well, you know, we have to clean them up a little bit and then we can give them back. Then they can give you these giant parcels here to help cover the cost of that. I mean, there's so many stories out there. You don't know. And, you know, to me, a lot of times it's all the above, you know, it's just not one thing. There's multiple things going on.
Yeah. It's very seldom one thing. There's multiple interests and agendas involved. But you mentioned the maps on the Tubbs fire. If you look at the Coffee Park area, the margin of the burn in Coffee Park, if you overlay it with Santa Rosa's planning documents or redevelopment documents for that area, it's almost the perfect fit.
Yeah.
It's that close.
Yeah. So you know, I wanted to go back to the Australian fires. You know, it was really interesting. You could lay down the proposed rail lines they had there and everything, and it followed the fires exactly. It was unbelievable how it followed, you know, the fires, and they were having trouble getting that major railway in and things like that. You know, okay, what better way just to burn the whole place out and just clear everybody out of there. And then you can get the land probably, you know, 5 cents on the dollar and whatever else. And they also cut their water off. They kept cutting their water off. Pretty soon they didn't have any water and everything was just a tender box there too. But there's all these, people are asking questions about, hey, you know, how come you cut our water off? How come we didn't have any water? And then B, why are these fires following the rail lines? Now, the other thing too, is that what I noticed with the elders there, we were talking with a lot of the Aboriginal elders and things like that. And they were doing all these ceremonies and things. And they said something was blocking it, you know, like they're trying to bring the rains in and do ceremony and it was blocking it. And I said, well, they're using other devices there to keep the coastal rains from coming in. You know, they're using harp technology and stuff like that. I said, why don't you pray to have that stuff mitigated, you know? And we were talking about that, you know, asking the higher beings to get involved and mitigate that. So, or override it completely. And that's when the rains came in. And boy, it just deluged there. It was the whole time we were there. As soon as we landed in Melbourne, going towards Sydney, there, it just poured and poured and poured the whole way. And so we had some, a lot of help from nature, and I think all the people doing prayers and ceremonies around that.
That is so cool. You know about Operation Popeye, right? You heard that one?
I've heard of it, but refresh my memory. I've heard the name before.
Operation Popeye is why when you watch a movie on Vietnam, you see it constantly pouring.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay.
It's about weather control, and they allegedly seeded the clouds and made it rain to wash out the Ho Chi Minh Trail. That's at least what they told us.
Yeah.
And to keep the Viet Cong from restocking, but all of that wet weather was exacerbated and or created.
Mm-hmm.
And so that technology has existed since the 60s.
Yeah.
And you're going to try and tell me that all these terrible fires have occurred in California and that they don't have the ability to make it rain?
Yeah.
They got a huge water supply just off the coast, right? Pacific Ocean. So I don't know. It's just some very, very nefarious activity.
And I'm just getting this information out. We're going to have some nefarious activity. We're having all kinds of weird stuff going on with our equipment. And that comes at almost every show when I really get on top of something. I know there's certain names, if you mention them on the show, you get killed. You know, it's like all of a sudden you lose your connection. And
it's like they're sitting there with their hand on a cord and I just...
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I know you feel if you mention, you know, Aluma Donkey, I'll just say that. But if you any of their names and things, you know, and you're all of a sudden I'm writing a newsletter and I'm trying to put some stuff in there and I go, oh, I can't even put this in. It's like it keeps changing it and it wouldn't let me even put these names in. And I go, okay, well, so I have to break the names up and make them look different so they won't get triggered, you know, by their system or whatever. It's unbelievable. I go, this is insane. This is like how much, because they have that AI and the AI will go in there and you're writing something and then you go to put this other name and all of a sudden it'll take the name out, you know, and you're going, what the heck, you know?
The censorship has been amazing.
Yeah.
I have other videos that I've done that the comments were frozen on them and the views were frozen. It only shows like 1,000 views where other videos, which I guess they think are safer or whatever, there's 20,000 views.
Yeah.
So, and information gets hard to find. It gets buried in the algorithms. You try to search for it. You have to come up with different strategies to find it. It's getting crazy.
Yeah, we've had major shadow banning. Everybody's talking about the shadow banning and all this other stuff. And I said, guys, I go, welcome to the club. We've been experiencing that intensely the past 20 years, even longer. And,
right.
And now it's just now coming out that people are blocked and shadow banned and things like that. But I said, you know, we know, and we watch our newsletters and our other stuff. All of a sudden we have like, you know, 20,000 people in there, and all of a sudden you go back in there and there's 10 or 5 and you go, what happened? What happened to our group? You know, that's been going on, and they're doing it again. They're actually, all these people are saying, hey, how come you took me off the newsletter? And I go, we didn't, you know, and that's been ongoing for quite some time. And we've changed all, I don't want to mention their names, but we've changed all these different major newsletter people to find one that's not being compromised. And we haven't found one yet, actually. So that they haven't gone in there and taken, you know, they, you know, it'll like, we'll open up a new thing, set it up. All of a sudden it'll jump to 15,000, like in a week, not even that. And all of a sudden it just stops. It just stops. It never goes, like in a week or 2 weeks, it goes to 15,000. And then all of a sudden it just stops. Like how can that much momentum just stop? There's no explanation for it. Do you think the, you know, I was thinking between the, you know, you got all this white hat stuff and the, you know, going on. And that's one thing I've tried to figure out is, like, they keep saying all this stuff is going on. There's all these indictments. There's all this other stuff. And I always said, when you see the chemtrail stop, you'll know when the white hats won. You know, when, yeah, and they're still just bombing. We're having the worst day ever of chemtrails. It's so thick right now. And, you know, I go, how can these guys be in charge or be in control with this massive chemtrail operation still going? And we saw it quit a couple times, and then it started up again.
After after the China Lake earthquakes?
Yeah.
Okay. We saw a full 2 months, with a couple of exceptions. There was a couple of days we saw chemtrail evidence.
Yeah.
But a full 2 months of the bluest skies that I've seen in years.
Yeah.
Amazing. So they took down that operation. But it's important for people to know that there's hundreds of these delivery sites.
Yeah.
Just in the United States alone. I'd estimate there's probably 300 of them. And they all participate in these geoengineering programs. So I believe it's going to take a little bit longer. But I would be inclined to agree with you that when you see the chemtrails stop, then we're making good progress.
I agree. You know, they're already pulling out the bioweapons, the coronavirus and the other stuff now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we all knew that was coming. You know, we knew these things. We know who's behind it and everything. They've even gone publicly and said, you know, just find out who's creating the vaccines for it, who's capitalizing on it, and who owns the patents on it, and you'll know what it's all about. But you know, a lot of us knew that was coming. We knew who was behind it, you know, and that whole agenda. But it's you know, I don't know. I think they're gonna have to step up the pace here pretty quick. There's not gonna be a whole lot of us left on the planet, which is their end goal.
I'm in agreement with that too. You know, in my opinion, there's two plans playing out on the planet simultaneously, and that's the cabal's plan for the destruction of humanity and enslavement of humanity, and then there's God's plan.
Yeah.
And I tend to focus on the positives where I can find them, and I see a lot of positives out there. The Great Awakening has been exponentially growing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing to see the number of people that are waking up.
I'll drink to that.
all the negativity that's going on the planet is helping to wake people up. So, yes. And they just adjusted the number of, they only update the site once a month on QMAP for the number of sealed indictments.
Mm-hmm.
And it just updated to 151,000.
Yeah. And some very big names in there.
Yes. And the highest percentage of those sealed indictments is for California. We got the number one spot on it.
Yeah.
But we all know how much corruption there is in this state. They've probably been stealing the elections for years, and we just have all these corrupt people in power, and they're making all these draconian decisions. So I think they're about to see the end of their careers.
Yeah, I do too. I used to live in Santa Cruz for about 6 years, and then I lived down in Orange County area, in Fullerton and Brea and stuff like that. But I know that area. I've been all over that area down there, and I like Northern California a lot better. But the even in the high desert, China Lake and all that, you know, we were raised in Apple Valley, California's kids, and we saw all the shifts and everything going on that everybody was talking about, you know, at Giant Rock and Otis Carr and Ralph Ring and those experiments. We actually witnessed those firsthand. But there's so much going on there. But I really do believe, like you're saying, I think what's behind the white hats and what's behind this shift towards healing is so huge. It's so immense. No man can stop it, or woman. I mean, it's massive. And all they're going to do is create more karma, which is going to be accelerated. And, you know, they're going to take themselves out, basically. There's no way of getting around this. There's nowhere to hide from yourself, you know, right. And what you've done. You know, it's going to follow you wherever you go. But
have you heard that there's – 12 sanctuary cities on the East Coast and the West Coast that there's been a special team sent in on those. Have you heard that?
No, I've heard some things are going on, but what was their objective? Was it the child trafficking or?
I think all that stuff's all related. It's just all related. So their objective is to work with law enforcement to form these teams and basically get after the really bad MS-13 illegal immigrants that are in there. I think that's their main objective. And then there is also very specialized military teams that have been being trained and are trained and are actively participating in clearing out the underground programs.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw an interesting thing that they had a new night vision they get them because it's so dark in those tunnels that the regular night gear doesn't work. And so they have a whole new night gear that they just, I don't know, something like $1 billion they allocated for this new equipment. So
it's pretty elaborate.
Yeah. And that's
they're being cleared out and destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. The only reason you would, why does everybody need that kind of night vision if they aren't going through tunnels? That, you know, everybody goes, oh, this is all nonsense. And I said, well, what are they gearing up for? I mean, you can't use those anywhere else other than deep underground places, you know, where there's no light. You know, that's the only place they function. But, you know, it's a no-brainer when you look at all the evidence, you know, about what's going on. I just bought a new one. Actually, I'm waiting for it. I just bought a new really nice. It's a third gen military, but it has the helmet and the click down so I can sky watch and film at the same time, you know. So we find out that's the best thing here is to have the night vision as a spotter and then have your camera handy, and then having it on the camera, it's really hard to get, you know, stuff, you know, inside the frame and everything else. But if you have spotters and they spot it and then they circle it with a laser, then you can hit it. Then you have your camera on it. That's the best way to get the footage here.
Two-person teams?
Yeah. You need at least a two-person. Even more eyes, the better.
Right.
Field, you know, because you can't, you know, unfortunately, we don't have eyes in the back of our head, you know, on this planet. But it'd be nice. But there's some, God, I don't know if you saw it, but we had like, you know, there was, I think I said there was 31 or 35 ships. It was more like 40-something ships came over the other day, and I got most of it on film. There were so many that kept coming, and we just filmed a ton more. But something really big is happening. I've never seen so many ships here right now. So something, and I feel it's close. And I know the higher dimensional, the very spiritually and technologically advanced beings are all lined up. They're working with the top leaders on the planet, and something really major is getting ready to unfold. And it might not happen it's not going to flip like a switch, but it's going to be a huge push to put an end to this old draconian program that we have here.
Right. And then that will lead us up toward, I'm drawing a blank on the word, but disclosure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think these things, some of these things, and people get mad at you when you say that. I think some of these things, like these viruses and these fires and the use of the Dew weapons and 9/11, all those things really had to happen to bring attention to how corrupt things are and how these people have no consciousness whatsoever towards ending life or you or anybody else. And there's so much inhumanity going on with these groups because there's non-human influence. And I think that had to happen. That things had to happen to bring people's attention. Same thing with the impeachment hearings. You know, it brought everybody's attention to just see how corrupt and dark things are, you know, in that political arena. So all these things had to happen. They have to play out for a reason, just to wake up as many people as possible.
Yeah, and it sure seems to be working, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's like, you know, you can't ignore it anymore. You used to be able to just stay in denial and just ignore it, but now it's in your face. You can't, you can't sweep it aside, you know, and put a conspiracy label on it, you know, and then dismiss it. It doesn't work anymore, you know. So it's that's what I think. It's done, you know.
That worked pretty well for him for a number of decades. The whole, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
But it's not working anymore. People
going back to Kennedy, that was so obvious. You know, what do they call it? The wandering bullet that just went everywhere and hit all these other people and things.
You know, when I woke up in 2008, that's where my research started, was with the Kennedy assassination. So I've read several books on it. Just great, great books.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a major Kennedy revival. It's almost like the spirit of Kennedy is back. And, you know, all the stuff that he said, he warned us about, and probably why they took him out, have come true. And I think now that you know, the people that are aware of this and these covert groups and all this, the unseen people behind the scenes. And so now it's almost like a revisitation of what Kennedy was warning us about. But this time we got the white hats involved, you know, a much larger group of people are educated about who these guys are and what their agenda is. Hitting the end of the hour, unfortunately, though. It's been very enlightening to get, you know, somebody of your caliber to talk about these things. I mean, you've been in the field and you know what's happening with all these things and you know, with the trees and the cars and everything else. Is there a way people can get in contact with you for more information or?
Yeah, I'm in several different places. I'm on Brighteon and also on, what's one of the other secondary channels? I always forget it.
BitChute?
Yeah, BitChute.
Uh-huh.
And the main body of my work related to the fire investigations is on YouTube, and you go up to the search bar and put in supposedly Shelley.
Okay.
S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. Great. That's the main body of my investigative work.
Awesome. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You've answered a lot of my questions and validated a lot of things I figured out what's going on, having personal friends involved in that. And keep up the great work that you're doing. If people really need to, you know, to figure out what's going on here so we can kind of rise up and put an end to it.
Right. Well, thank you, James. Thanks very much for having me. It was a pleasure to meet you in person instead of just watching you on video. I know it's an image, but I hope to come up for the, in fact, I'm pretty sure I am going to come up for the seminar this summer.
Great. Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I guess we'll see here. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio and East Eddie Stargate. We've got to sign off, unfortunately, folks. I wish I had a two-hour show, but I don't. So, anyway, have a great evening. Keep an open mind, loving heart, and pure intent, and that'll get you through these times. Good night.